The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Michael Lynn is perhaps Ireland's best known white collar criminal, a man who went on the run for 17 years, avoiding jail time across Europe and South America. But he was eventually extradited from Brazil and he's been sentenced to 16 years jail. But with time in lieu for his prison sentence served in Brazil, he will serve a shorter time here. But so little is known about the saga that led to this moment. And to tell us all about it is Michael O'Farrell, a journalist who followed Lynn right up to his arrest. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Michael Lynn and how he went from being a humble, if he ever was, solicitor to being a property developer.
Well, Michael Lynn grew up in Cross Milan in County Mayo, went to Trinity to study law. Having done that, he set up a legal practice in Blanchardstown on the edge of Dublin. And in doing that, he learnt about conveyancing and he learnt about the property business and he met bankers. And through running his law business, he developed an interest, if you like, in the property business. And he also learnt about a particular loophole that he spotted or he was told about in the property business, which allowed him to borrow money against the same properties from various different banks. One of the good examples of that is Glenlyon in Howth, which was a 5 million euro house. Lynn was able to borrow 5 million from that house from one bank, pledging the deeds to that bank, but then he was able to do so from another bank and another bank and another bank.
Now, he could do that as a solicitor. Mm. You and I could not do that.
No. The way the property system worked at the time, it's been improved a little bit since, is that the banks would accept an undertaking from somebody like Lynn, from a solicitor, that the deeds would be lodged against the loan. So that's what he was able to do.
So therefore, he was able to, you know, have a property worth 5 million, raise 5 million on that several times, and then have the seed capital to go investing in other more exotic places.
Yes, he couldn't borrow abroad was one of the reasons he did this. One of the reasons he stole this money. He's been convicted for this crime. So he came up with this ruse to obtain money from the banks here, and he siphoned that money into his businesses abroad. He was running developments in Portugal, in Hungary, Slovakia, in Bulgaria, building thousands of apartments and selling them, in many cases, to normal Irish people who were putting down their life savings, 40,000, 50,000 for those houses.
Now, did he build a lot and did he sell a lot in a kosher way, in a way that allowed people to own apartments in these exotic places?
He had one initial success in a place called Cabanas in the Algarve near Tavira. He built about 70 or 80 apartments in phase one. That was successful. Those people got those apartments. And on foot of that success, I think he developed a huge ambition to do the same all over the world and all over Europe. There was supposed to be a phase two and a phase three in Cabanas. There were supposed to be hundreds of apartments in Budapest, apartments in Slovakia, more than 1,000 apartments in Bulgaria. Those apartments, many of them were sold off plan, but were never built.
Now, why did it go wrong for him? I mean, even though the fundamental premise of all of this was dishonest, getting money against one house several times over, but at the same time, if the first development worked, why didn't the rest of them work?
I think he gambled too much. He got in over his head. His ambitions were bigger than the reality of what he was able to achieve. But also the Celtic Tiger happened in the middle. And around about October 2007, people realized here that there was something fishy about what was going on in his business and in his law firm. And the Law Society had gone in because of those suspicions and audited the firm. And he was due to show up in court in October 2007 to explain what the Law Society had found were very poor, possibly corrupt practices with money and client accounts.
Did he show?
He didn't show, and that's the point, and that's why Mr. Lynn is perhaps famous to this day. He went on the run. He left the country in October 2007. I was tasked back then with finding him. It wasn't an easy job. It wasn't a job I wanted, to be frank with you.
Now, where did he go?
Well, initially, he wasn't a criminal initially or a suspected criminal. He was just a man who had a lot of questions to answer.
And could help Gardaí with their inquiries kind of thing.
Yeah. The Gardaí certainly had begun an investigation as soon as he left. The Law Society were investigating him. The Director of Corporate Enforcement were investigating him. Where did he go? He initially went to Portugal. He spent that first Christmas in Portugal calling his bankers around the world, liquidating his assets. We discovered, subsequently pursuing him throughout Europe, that everywhere he went in the weeks and months after he went on the run, he sold out, moved his assets in Bulgaria, in Hungary, in Portugal to anonymous offshore firms. And that's interesting because to this day, 17 years later, even during his trial this year and his
subsequent conviction.
Subsequent conviction. At that time, at the same time as being on trial here, the Gardaí had launched a fresh money laundering investigation, which is looking at the money trails dating back
So they haven't found all this money. Now, he did live in Brazil for a while. I'm sure he had expenses, shall we say, living expenses. So some of the money must be gone, spent, as it were. But the suspicion is there's a lot more money out there.
Well, you know, this is a historical story in many ways, but it's still bang up to date and current because, as I said, there is an ongoing money laundering investigation. And that saw raids conducted on Mr. Lynn's home in Wicklow and the homes of other associates around Ireland in two other counties in January this year. There was a sum in excess, well in excess of €2 million seized in various accounts linked to businesses that are being run by associates of Mr. Lynn's, who date right back to the time when he was disseminating those assets and we were chasing him around Europe.
Now, he had to deal with a lot of nefarious people, you know, mafia people in Bulgaria. There was bribery and corruption involved at some stages of these property transactions, a Chechen at one point. I mean, this adventure for you and tracking him down brought you into contact with very strange people.
Yeah, it certainly did. Mr. Lynn, in his trial here, he was perfectly happy to admit that he had, in his words, paid bribes and engaged in corruption in Ireland. He never proved that in court here, but he was willing to admit that. He had a problem with being a thief, but he had no problem admitting to being corrupt. What we do in one part of the book is we show how he really was corrupt in Bulgaria, for example, where he entered into a deal with a Chechen crook. Hashiev was his name. This guy was a hardcore mafia Black Sea crook. And what Lynn did with him was the Chechen and his mafia gang had bundled up packages of land belonging to small landholders in the Black Sea resort called Skorpilovsky and packaged that into a deal for Lynn, which Lynn bought into for €1.6 million. But part of the deal involved bribing the local authority officials to ensure that planning could happen on this land, which was, by the way, the last nature reserve on the Black Sea coast. So it shouldn't really have got planning for
But the officials were bribed to get that planning. Now, did the small holders, do they get money? Did they get a fair price for their land?
This is an interesting thing from an Irish perspective. They got paid a pittance for their land, and Lynn then stood to make millions on the back of it. They were strong-armed by the mafia gang into selling for nothing in order for the mafia gang to sell on to Lynn, in order for him to get planning through corruption so he could make €70 million on the deal.
Now, what was it about Lynn that persuaded the mafia that this is a man that they should be doing business with? Was it his portfolio of enterprise, shall we say, that persuaded them, this is a mover and shaker in property, he can do what we require to be done?
Lynn is an interesting character. I think Lynn can sell himself to anybody.
Well, he tried to sell me a property on the Late Late Show, you know, in hospitality when we were giving away one of the apartments. I don't know whatever happened in that regard because I don't think the prize was ever delivered.
That's very interesting. Actually, what happened was the winners of that home, it was the most expensive prize ever given away on the Late Late Show, worth over $100,000 for an apartment in a ski resort that Lynn was building in a place called Bansko in the Bulgarian mountains. What happened was those people never got their prize and legal settlements, I understand, had to be made.
I know nothing. In fact, I don't. But I do remember Michael Lynn trying to persuade me to invest in one of his properties. I think it was a Bulgarian property, but I demurred.
Right. But did you find him credible?
Yes. I mean, I didn't want to do that kind of business. To me, the supply lines were too long, for example. You know, you can't be sure. And do you really want to be looking after a property in Bulgaria? The answer I gave myself was no. So I said, thanks, but no thanks.
Sure.
But he was a plausible individual.
Listen, hundreds of people wouldn't have paid him. In Lynn's own admission, he received €13 million from ordinary Irish punters who paid deposits for yet-to-be-built apartments. A lot of people trusted Lynn. Bankers trusted him, businessmen trusted him, crooks in Bulgaria trusted him.
He was perfectly willing to meet you from time to time along the trail, wasn't he?
He was. He's an impulsive kind of an individual. Psychologically, he's very interesting. He thinks he can come off the better of every scenario he finds himself in. When I first caught up with him, it was an ad hoc. I chased him and I ran after him before he got into his car. He initially didn't want to speak, clearly enough, but something clicked in his mind, something impulsive clicked in his mind, and I think that's the way he often works. You know, he is impulsive. He will make a decision on a dime about talking to me, about investing millions, about doing something corrupt. He'll just make that decision quickly and do it. And
now, then he does a Ronnie Biggs and goes to Brazil. Why Brazil?
Well, Brazil at the time, of course, didn't have any extradition agreement with Ireland, and it's interesting that Lynn, a year prior to going on the run, prior to ever getting in trouble, had laid plans to go to Brazil. His first trip there was in January 2007. He didn't go on the run until December that year. He had gone over in January and he had met lawyers and he had inquired about setting up his first company. He'd inquired about how to send money over there from his European firms. He'd asked about residency and how he could get residency there. And then when things really got bad, after a couple of years on the run, when his assets were liquidated in Europe, when his Portuguese company, even though it wasn't his name, had gone bust, he went to Brazil. Also, of course, he had been charged at that time, or was just about to be charged with a crime for the first time, turning him into a real fugitive as opposed to somebody.
Yeah. One of the aspects, and Ronnie Biggs, we saw this when he got into a relationship and had children and so on. Michael Lynn had Brazilian-born children.
He did. At the time he was arrested in 2013, he had one Brazilian-born child. I think he thought he was free, high and dry at that point, because as parents of Brazilian child, Lynn and his wife, Breed Murphy, were allowed to stay there. They had residency. There was no extradition deal with Ireland. There was nothing, he felt there was nothing to see him brought home at that point. Mm. He had begun a new life. He lived in a nice compound with a swimming pool close enough to the sea in a city called Recife. He had started to buy development land again, and he was gearing up to build apartments for workers in a local burgeoning port. He probably never, and he might have gotten away with this, maybe if it weren't for Alan Shatter, who was Justice Minister at the time, Lynn might never have ended up coming home. Alan Shatter was a member, of course, of the legal community. He particularly abhorred what Lynn had done, the bad reputation he'd given lawyers. So it was Alan Shatter who insisted that the government make a cabinet decision to try and do something to get Lynn back. And what that resulted in was a reciprocal extradition agreement whereby we'd give Brazil a prisoner and they would give us one in return. And of course, the one we wanted was Michael Lynn. So,
now, had he been then kept in prison once that request went in, was he arrested in Brazil and kept behind bars?
He was arrested in 2013. He resisted. He could have agreed to come home immediately. Mm-hmm. He didn't. He resisted extradition. He stayed in prison in a hellhole of a prison called Cotel for 4.5 years before he was finally extradited home. And that prison, I mean, let me tell you, I've been to that prison. I've stood outside and watched the thousands of women queuing up at nighttime before they go in, including his wife, Breed Murphy. That prison it's not a prison as we would know it. It's run by the inmates, really, and they're mm-hmm. chaveiros or key holders who actually control what happens inside. The guards only control the gate. So Lynn has spoken about how inside people were decapitated, for example, when he was there. Horrible violence like that happened. It wasn't a nice place to be.
But there were conjugal visits.
Well, this is it. He was allowed conjugal visits, and he did sire, if that's the right word, two further children while in prison. His wife was pregnant when he went into prison, so that made 4 Brazilian-born children, and perhaps every fresh child increased his chances of being able to argue that he should stay in Brazil, but it wasn't to be at the end of the day.
So he eventually is brought back here and faces the music and ultimately is convicted. His sentence was a long sentence, but some account would be taken of time served behind bars in Brazil.
Yeah, he was sentenced to 16 years as a total sentence, but that was reduced to take account of the conditions in Brazil. Interestingly, one of Lynn's colleagues or cellmates in Brazil was a gentleman called Paul Lange, who'd been a German crook who went on the run, like Lynn, and lived in the same city. Lange was extradited before Lynn, and the German courts allowed him, 2.5 days for every day he'd spent in Brazil.
Ah, because such was the regime in the prison.
Such were conditions.
That a day in their jail was certainly 2.5 days in a German jail.
Yeah, so Lynn used that, and he actually submitted the German court ruling to the court here when he pleaded for a lesser sentence, and they accepted that to a degree. They gave him 7 years off the 16-year sentence for the time he'd spent in Brazil.
All right. So he languishes behind bars now?
He's behind bars now. Ultimately, with remission and everything, he'll serve probably less than 5 years. But this is a man who, had he turned around and not gone on the run 17 years ago, I'm sure he would have been a free man within a year or two.
And with his talents, perhaps a successful man.
Perhaps. There's every possibility of that, yeah.
Well, we've only touched the surface of this tale, because it is a complex and tortuous tale, and a very exciting tale, I have to tell you, Michael. It's called Fugitive, the Michael Lynn story, the true story of the epic hunt to bring one of Ireland's most notorious fugitives to justice. It's published by Merrion Press, a brilliant yarn, and its author, Michael O'Farrell. Michael, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.